Neu in der Deutschlandcard-App. Sammle Punkte mit deinen Kassenbons von DM, Rossmann und vielen weiteren Supermärkten und Drogerien. Einfach Kassenbons scannen, punkten und sparen. Jetzt gratis mit der Deutschlandcard-App.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Inside Track with me, Luke Allam. I am joined today by a two-time Olympic gold champion. She has an OBE also to boot. Nicola Adams, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's amazing. You're a two-time Olympic gold champion. It sounds so good when you say it.
It really does. It sounds better hearing it as well.
Yeah. It's like, have you seen, there's a very famous, I think when Jim Carrey goes on stage, right, and he's presenting one of the awards, Academy Awards, and he goes, I'm Jim Carrey. I'm a two-time Golden Globe winner. When I go to bed at night, I don't just dream any regular dream. I dream like a two-time Golden Globe winner, looking for three. Did you ever have that? Did you ever go around, going to the shops, go around, you know, do your supermarket shopping, or you go, I don't know, you're picking up your son from nursery or something, and say, you know what, I'm a two-time Olympic gold champion.
Yeah, like, I mean, you have to, right? I have to. I mean, because it takes so much hard work to get there, to be a two-time Olympic champion. It's so much hard work. And it's like, yeah, do you know what? I'm take that. I acknowledge that every day, every day.
That's absolutely crazy. And you should, to be fair. So for those who don't know you, how did you win your gold medals?
I won the first one in London 2012. That was the first time women's boxing was ever featured in the Olympic Games. So I made history there.
Yep.
And then I was like, you know what? Why not just go again and get the second one? So I went out to Rio 2016 and did it again.
Defended your title. And then after that, you had an unprecedented amount of success. You were basically winning every single type of belt out there. European Championships, World Championships, between 2017 and 2019. Is that right?
Yeah, won everything, turned professional, became the WBO champion, and then I retired, and now I'm focusing on my acting career.
It's honestly crazy that you're in my living room, first of all, right? I'm very honored to have you here. I've seen some of your appearances also on the Jonathan Ross show, Graham Norton show. What are they like, those two guys?
Yeah, they're really nice. Are they? Really, yeah, really, really nice. Really nice. When I was on the Graham Norton show, I actually got the chance to be on the sofa with The Rock. And just hearing his stories and just hearing that he was a fan of boxing and hearing that his dad was actually, he used to spar Muhammad Ali. And I was just like, wow. Completely mind-blowing.
He's a big fan of yours. I mean, you love Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
Could you take The Rock?
He's big, man. He's like, his thighs are like the size.
Are they really?
Like my whole body.
He's a unit.
He's a unit.
That's crazy.
He's a unit.
Look, at the end of the show, by the way, I'm going to ask you, how do I compare with Jonathan Ross and with Graham Norton? So just keep that in the back of your mind. Jonathan, if you're watching, I'm coming for you. You brought a mug in. Actually, there are two mugs here other than mine. So talk to me about the mugs that you have here. What's the blue one all about?
Yeah, so this one I actually had to bring in because I haven't got my mugs from home, but my favorite mug from home is a Dragon Ball Z mug that I have. And it actually, like, when you put the tea in or like hot water or whatever goes in there, it changes color and it does the fireball.
One of those, but from Iceland, like it's a volcano. So you put it in the hot water and all of a sudden the volcano starts
going up. Yeah, yeah. I'm a big fan of anime.
That's crazy. I would never have associated that with you. By the way, you know, I'm going to steal that mug and put it on the mantelpiece behind you. Right?
Yeah.
It's not your anime one, but it's good enough. But have you always been into anime? Is that something that, you know, is one of your passions, or is that something that you picked up along the way?
Yeah. It's always been one of my passions. I've always been, I've always watched anime, Dragon Ball Z, Demon Slayer.
I had no idea what you're talking about. I'm going to pretend I know what you're talking about. I have no idea.
Yeah. There's the Tower of God. They're just like, I love the fact that you, it's a cartoon, but then it's so serious and real at the same time. Like, main characters just get finished off and you're just like, oh my God. But then you also have the science fiction part of it as well. So you can like add in things that you wouldn't necessarily be able to add into, a show with real people.
Yeah.
So I quite like that side of it.
How is that treating you? How's the relationship going?
Really good. Love raising a son, Taylor. He's two now.
Is
so he? Yeah, he's into everything, running up and down. like, I mean, I know now why they call it the terrible twos.
Yeah, by the way, they don't
you
stop
have two
at,
kids, right?
I've got two boys, yeah, and it doesn't stop at two, right? So my son, my eldest, is a three-year-old, and he's still in the terrible two. So just let you know, it doesn't end at two. It just keeps on, yeah. keeps on going.
No.
And and I got the younger one who's going to be two soon, who keeps following what the older one does. So basically, whatever the eldest does, the youngest one will also follow. So if you're planning on number two, just...
need to keep that in mind.
Yeah, maybe give it a bit of distance.
Yeah.
Safe word time. So I might ask some questions potentially that you'll be like, oh, Luca, no, take it easy. I'm sure I won't, but... if you do feel something that you don't want to talk about or you want to sort of avoid, you have a safe word. So what would be your safe word?
Pineapples.
Pineapples. Do you know how many people keep talking about pineapples as their safe word? It's crazy. I think you're the fifth or sixth person I've had on the show who uses pineapples as a safe word. What is that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of my favorite fruits. So
I think there's a conspiracy about, you know, there's something, pineapples are suddenly taking
and
over
safety.
The world.
Yeah,
you know, whoever drinks or eats a pineapple just sort of, like, gets ingrained in them. That's mental. It's really weird, isn't it? Why
yeah.
is everyone using pineapple as a safe word? I wonder. But fair enough. I will note that. So any questions that I have, I'll use pineapple as a safe word for you as protection. Cool.
Awesome. Yeah.
So for those who don't know, because obviously you moved to Dubai, so people in the UK will know you, but for people who are watching in this region, they may not be too familiar with your story, okay? Yes, you've won 2 gold medals. Fantastic achievement. Yes, you were knighted, right? You have an Order of the British Empire. You have an OBE
yeah.
from the Queen.
Yeah.
Right? What, did you ever meet the Queen?
Yeah.
What was
yeah.
she What was she like?
A few times. She was...
Well, look at you.
Well, you know, me and Queenie.
Yeah, yeah.
She was really, really nice. I can just never get over the image yeah. of imagining her watching my fight, because she said that she saw my...
She's a fight fan.
Yeah, yeah. She's really? She was a big boxing fan.
Yeah.
And she watched my fights on the TV, and I just have this vision of the Queen just sat there with a cup of tea, just, you know, chilling
on,
out. Yeah, yeah, watching yeah, yeah. the boxing.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Obviously, she's obviously passed away. She was a great queen, though.
We loved
Queen Elizabeth. And so you've obviously left the UK. So a lot of people will know you in the UK. But when you moved to Dubai, how are you introducing yourself to people? Because obviously you're trying to rebrand in some way, right? You've obviously written a book and you're trying to get now into acting. I think you've just landed a movie role, right? Out of Hollywood. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. Just landed my first role.
Yeah.
The movie's called The Gun on Second Street.
Okay.
Yeah, we start filming in April. So I'm super, super excited about that. I can't wait to start filming. It's been a long journey. I've been in acting school since 2020, so yeah. I'm still in acting school now. I'm just always learning.
It's completely
all the time.
Completely different
yeah, completely different. I think the only thing that carries over from the boxing is the work ethic,
commitment,
and yeah just having that. And I'm also very coachable because of that.
Yeah,
I can take everything in and then start performing.
Amazing. Look, there's a lot I want to talk to you about. So you started boxing when you were 12 years old.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. And at the time, you weren't being able to fight any girls because there weren't any girl boxers at the time. So you had to fight boys.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until much later on that you had to actually have your first professional or amateur fight. Okay. But you took a massive commitment and you sort of had that belief that you were going to make it. And you ended up making it. You then obviously... went on Strictly Come Dancing, correct me if I'm wrong, right? And you had to learn a completely different type of skill set, very similar to, I'm guessing, boxing in some regards with the foot movement and everything like that. And now you're doing acting. So I'm looking at your life sort of span, and you've had 3 different waves of committing to different types of major activities or professions, if you like. Is that something that you've always had, or is that something that, you know what, you just said, oh, I've done it once, maybe I can do it again and I can do it again? Or do you have this sort of belief that you want to try and conquer as many things as you can?
I think I just go into things and I'm like, you know what, I'll give that a try. I'd never, do you know, when Strictly Come Dancing came around, and I'd never seen the show. I didn't really watch it. And my agent was like, oh, you go do this show. It's really good. You'll love it. It's just dancing. So I'm like, oh, okay, how hard could it be, right? It's just dancing. He says, just tune in Saturday night and have a look. So I've put on the TV and I'm watching this show, and the dancers are like flipping in the air, coming down from the ceiling. I was like, geez, I was like, I phoned it up straight away. I was like, this is proper dancing.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, just going around the floor and messing about a little bit. You know, you actually, you have to learn a full on.
It's legit.
Yeah, a full on routine. So it was really cool being able to try something new. And I think that's always been a part of me, I guess, being able to try and learn something new. But I think acting, I've always wanted to do. It was just the boxing came first.
But you've been sort of smashing stereotypes as well, kind of throughout. You famously on Strictly Come Dancing with another woman, right?
Yeah,
was that the first time that ever happened?
Yeah, that was the first
time. So what was that like being in the UK at the time, being on national television and being in a couple that was obviously same sex?
It got mixed. A lot of people were like, yeah, this is amazing. And then a few people were like, oh my God, this is crazy. This can't be done. And it's like, but you go to a nightclub and you dance with your girlfriends.
Yeah.
When you're there, what difference does it make?
Yeah,
and then I got a whole community from the dance community that were like, oh my God, I'm so happy you're doing this because there's not that many male dancers. Mm. So a lot of the time, the women dance together in the competitions and they were like, it's so nice to be recognized for that.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, like I'm breaking down a barrier that I didn't even know, you know, was one for them in the dance community as well. So it was really nice to be able to do that. And just, I guess, just move people forward.
You must have inspired a lot of people, right? I'm guessing.
Or yeah,
to feel like that's okay. It's okay to, you know. And is that something that you wear proudly, trying to smash stereotypes?
Yeah, definitely. I love to be able to, you know, smash stereotypes and change perception, because I guess that's what change is all about. You've always got to be able to adapt and change. Things are changing all the time. I mean, if you look at Dubai 50 years ago, it was just sand. You know, it was just a desert, and look at it now. It's a built up city, a community. It's great.
It's a city for everybody, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. And it's all about being able to adapt to change.
Yeah. Are you regretful about anything in your past that you wish you could have done differently?
Yeah, I get asked this a lot, and I'm like, no, because if I didn't do the things that I did, maybe I wouldn't be sat in the chair. Maybe I won't be sat having this interview with you.
It's not an interview, it's a chat. We're having a chat. Yeah.
So what about you? Have you done anything that you regret?
There's a lot of things. Small things though, not the main. I think the big stuff you get right. I think if you look at all the big things in life, it starts with your life partner, right? Who do you want to choose? I married a fantastic woman, right? So for me, that was the right decision. Having two beautiful boys was another big decision. That was also, I mean, I know what I just said 5 minutes ago, but that was also a right decision. Me starting doing something different to what I was doing beforehand, I was in corporate for about 20 years, is for me now the right decision because it feels right. You know, in 5 years' time, I'll look back and saying, was that the best thing I ever did from a working perspective? But, you know, I think, like you said, everything that you do, you sort of, with the information that you have at the time, you make the best informed decisions you can. It's only hindsight that makes you think, God, what was I doing?
But
right now, I feel super liberated and I feel great. So no major regrets, only little small ones.
I
shouldn't have had that slice of pizza. You know, that sort of stuff.
I have that one as well.
By the way, no pineapple on my pizza. Do you have pineapple on your pizza?
No.
Okay, that's good. Okay. And so you're looking now to redefine who Nikki Adams is, right?
Yeah.
When people come to you and they meet you for the first time, what feels most natural to introduce yourself as?
For me now?
You're in that space, right? Where you're not an actress, but you're starting, you're on a new path, but you've known for something else. And I can relate. I've been known for something else and I'm on a new path. So when someone asks you now, how do you, like, who are you? Is that easy to answer or quite challenging?
I say I'm an actor.
Okay.
For me.
So you put that hat on immediately.
Yeah. For me and a lot of actors, once you start acting, you are an actor.
Yeah.
You go into the classroom, you're acting, you're an actor.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way, I guess that's the way they teach you to see it.
Yeah.
But when I think about my, acting journey and I think about some of the self-tapes I did in the past, and I thought I was so good. Like, I thought I was really good.
You did it in front of the mirror.
I look back now and I'm just like, oh no, it was so bad. It was so bad.
Have you ever done an acceptance speech in front of the mirror?
Yeah.
Thanking your mom and whatever. All that stuff. Yeah. What kind of movie would you love to have been in? Like, if you could go back in time and be sort of supplanted into a movie, what movie would that have been? And what would have been your role?
Ooh. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. See, because I really like the Marvel movies. Okay. So
You're a bit of a comic geek, right? Yeah. I like this.
Like any Marvel movie would be awesome.
Okay.
But if there was a role that I could play, I'd probably go for, have you ever seen the movie Split?
No, I haven't.
With James McAvoy, if you haven't watched it, he actually plays like a split personality, so loads of different characters but in one person.
Oh wow.
And I'd love a role like that, or something that's really going to challenge me, and how he just moves from different characters in just a split second is unbelievable. Yeah. It's like you have to be so talented to be able to have this in your mind, and then you're also thinking about your lines as well. You've got to have some where the camera is all at the same time as playing five or six different people.
Yeah.
It's special. Definitely have a look at that.
I will. Method acting it takes a toll on its actors, by the way. A lot of people have suffered big time because they get so engrossed in the role that they're playing. I mean, famously, Heath Ledger was one of them who sadly passed away. But a lot of people talk about how the role of the Joker played such a difficult, challenging role that he had to completely become that person. And to deal with that psychologically afterwards is obviously very, very difficult. And there's a list of others as well. To be the best in acting, because I'm guessing you're doing this because you want to be the best. You're a competitor. Yeah. I mean, you win gold medals. Right, you meet the queen. You're someone who wants to be the very, very best. Are you prepared to go as far as it takes to prove yourself? Or are you here just to pick up a paycheck, you know, show your face, keep your brand sort of in the spotlight to some degree? What is the ambition here?
Yeah, no, I want to be the best. I want to push the boundaries of me and what I can do. And when you were saying actually about the how it takes a toll on you, because the best actors, you really do feel that they are that person. When you watch it, you can't tell that they're acting. And to do that, you have to embody the character that you're playing. And I've found, like, even just doing, when we've been acting different scenes for different things and having to embody that person, and it stirs up so much emotion inside of you. And sometimes it's hard to, I guess, let go of it. And it stays with you sometimes. And that was, I think for me in the beginning, that was quite difficult because I'd had lots of different trauma in my life growing up. And when I first started acting, because I'd been a boxer and you used to very much poker face, you know, you don't show any emotion, you get hit,
you can't show your hurt.
Yeah. And so when I started acting, all of a sudden I'm doing a complete role reversal, and now I've got to show all these emotions and I'm feeling these emotions, and I'm like, wow, I don't even know how to deal with the emotions that I'm feeling now, because I've spent my whole life just bottling them up.
Suppressing it.
Yeah. And now they're all coming out in lots of different places and different ways. And so I had to go to therapy as well to work on my trauma and everything. So now I'm in a place where now I know how to control my feelings and my emotions.
What kind of trauma?
The trauma of growing up in a family where my dad was abusive, and then my mum was emotionally abusive, and you carry these things and you don't realize how much of an effect they take on you, because you walk around and you think, yeah, I'm great, you know, I've come through all this stuff, but you don't realize that everything has a toll on you. And so I got to a point where I was like, I wanted to go into therapy I think more, a little bit for the acting as well, but more for my son, because I don't want to continue the generational trauma, because without sometimes knowing it, you can pass on that trauma onto
100%.
Onto your child. Yeah, yeah. So it was about just putting a line in the sand and just going, yeah.
So what kind of therapy, if you're asking? Because I've done similar thing. I've done more, they call it theta healing. I don't know if you've heard of theta healing, but it's a lot of that goes into your subconscious, right? And what really all of the childhood trauma that you have and what you've been through. And if you do theta healing right, it can basically stop or prevent future generations from inheriting that same trauma.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure if it was like this, but it sounds like the same thing, but it might be called something different, but definitely having rewiring the brain to connect
100%.
The dots properly and to make me more of an all-round better person. And I feel so much happier for it as well. Nice. And I didn't realize
how much damage you've had. Can relate 100%. Look, and we're both the same age. We're 42, right? Great age, by the way, 42.
Yeah.
1982, baby.
Yes.
The year of the dog in China. And we also, another thing in common is I went to university in Leeds as well. And you're obviously from up north, Leeds. Like, you like Leeds, you?
I do.
How's my accent? Pretty good. Did I pull up a Yorkshireman?
That was all right. Was that? What did you study? What did you study?
I did history. I did history at university because I wanted to be a lawyer. Funny enough.
And then
And then I did a postgraduate in marketing and advertising.
But I
love Leeds. You know, when you're 42 at a certain age, these things like going to therapy and doing healing, we were like on the cusp of like our parents, our generation, our parents' generation would never have done that, right?
Yeah.
It was starting to become a little bit more mainstream for people like us. I know other friends of mine, similar age, who are also just starting to dip their toe. But for people younger, it becomes much more of a norm. But I think me and you are the same kind of age where it's like, is it a dirty word to go do therapy? I felt it was when I was younger. I felt that, you know, if you go to therapy, there's something wrong with you. But actually, the more you do it, the more you realize it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, right. And you realize that the way people respond to you sometimes, and like you can see, and you're like, yep, you're responding from trauma.
You know, you're an expert.
I guess you could see it. I think it just opens up. I guess it opens up your mind, your eyes, and into so many different things. And I think it's really helped me with my acting journey as well, because I know, okay, what kind of the character that I'm playing, the grew up a certain way. So I know they're carrying some kind of trauma that's going to make 100%. Them act a different 100%. Way to maybe a person that hasn't experienced that.
Yeah.
So it's I just love that.
Right, this is the part of the show where you take charge. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Hey guys, it's me again. Do you get worried about giving a speech or, you know, being on a podcast or being someone that's been told to present in front of their client or to their boss? A lot of people have anxiety when it comes to public speaking. In fact, 74% of every one of us is terrified about the idea of standing in front of other people and trying to convince them of something. The good news is there's a lot of people that can help. In fact, I've launched my own training program, which I'm calling Master Pitch, which combines my 20 years of corporate background running big businesses, dealing with clients, as well as my own personal passion point of presenting in front of large audiences or being on camera, or in fact, even being on the inside track. So if you want to improve things like your tone, your pace, your storytelling narrative, and how to structure properly, as well as to understand your audience better and to drive real impact, I'm sure I can help you out. Whether individual level or at a corporate level, my Master Pitch training program can definitely make you a better public speaker. So drop me an email at info@lukealam.com or check out my website, lukealam.com, if you want to find out more information, more details. Right, let's get back to the show. In that bag over there is a bunch of different questions.
Mm-hmm.
They're written on golf balls.
Yeah.
I like golf. Okay.
I like golf too.
Yeah, nice. You just started playing recently.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So if you take the bag, read out one ball at a time and we'll have a chat about it.
All right, then let's see.
This way, it looks like it's your questions. You know what I mean? Because you're in charge.
Boxing throws more fights than punches. Debate.
Does boxing throw more fights than actual punches? How corrupt is boxing?
It goes so deep. I think the amateur side is pretty much clean. you know, there's not really much to do there. There's drug testing and everything. So, you know, there's no funny business going on. But when you go into the professional side of boxing, and that just like, that opened up my eyes to a whole new world. Fighters being cheated out of the money, promoters not paying the fighters, and then saying to them, oh, well, we'll give you your money, but we want you to fight this guy and then you'll get paid. You know, there's
dangling that carrot.
Yeah, yeah. There's so much of that goes on behind closed doors. Boxers not being paid the right amounts for their fights, because you've got to remember, a lot of these fighters, they've come from nothing. The majority of the fighters actually come from nothing. It's very rare that you find a fighter that fights that came from a privileged background. Yeah. You know, and I think they get taken advantage of most of the time. I've known fighters to be like, oh, they go to the promoter and they'd be like, here's $100,000. And they're like, oh, like this will be the most amount of money they've ever seen, you know, in their life on a table in front of them. And they're like, yeah, I can have that. And it's like, yeah, cool. But what they don't realize is they'll be like, oh, so I got you this car, I got you this apartment. So out of that $100,000, they're going to take the money for the car, they're going to take the money for the apartment. Oh, and the trainer also needs paying too, so we're going to take that too. And, you know, and then there's the tax man, he's going to take
that
some
fine
too.
Print.
Yeah.
So they and drown it's them just, in that fine print.
Yeah. But and then it's like they'll headline these big events, pay-per-view, and say they get $100,000. How much do you think they possibly make in a 90,000 sold out arena? And they think they're making the most money ever with the $100,000. They're just getting, you know, completely robbed.
Yeah. And what about the actual fight itself? Fighters throwing fights.
Yeah, yeah.
How often does
that happen? That happens too. I'm not sure how often that happens, but you have the first few fights, you always fight journeymen anyway.
Yeah.
So they know that they're just in there to teach you like little bits, you know, of how to get around the ring. Basically just get you through the rounds to get you used to it. So you always know those first few fights, they're just fighting somebody that's there to lose. You know, you've probably seen sometimes when they say the fight card of the journeyman and he's like had, I don't know, 300 fights and lost like 295 fights, you know. So you know what you know what they're there for. And then there's the judging as well sometimes. Sometimes the judges get paid off.
Yeah.
It is a hard spot because you're not only fighting the person in the ring, you're fighting the judges, like, and everything else that goes around.
And the crowd as well, to be fair. The crowd have their favorites, home venue, away venue, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like it's been seen as a sport that has had a lot of corruption regarding it.
Yeah,
and in a way, it's ironic because boxing is one of the purest forms of sport.
Right,
it's two people in a room, in a ring, boxing it out. Right, who's stronger? Who's tougher? You know, who can take more punches? Who can hit harder? But that has been corrupted. There are some fights. I mean, look, the Mike Tyson fight. I'm sure you watched that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, that did not look like that was a normal, regular fight. It looked at many opportunities that, you know, Tyson could have knocked out, but he didn't. He chose not to, which is really sad to see because it hurts the legacy of that boxer.
But I also feel as well, I feel that he just couldn't get close to Jake as well. You got to remember he's 58 years old.
I get that. But there were times where he would go in and then Tyson would be ready to sort of, the arm was coiled and then he doesn't.
He didn't throw it.
He's completely exposed, you know.
I think sometimes as well, it's to do with timing. He might have thought if he throws the shot, it might not have connected.
Yeah.
Because in the first few rounds I was seeing, you could see his head movement. He's slipping, he's slipping, but his feet just weren't there to be able to get those counter punches off that he needs to. I mean, it could have been fixed.
Yeah.
But I feel.
Money talks, man. Money talks.
Yeah.
Mike, if you're watching, I mean, no disrespect. It wasn't me who said it. Should we do another ball?
Have you ever done boxing?
I sparred once, but it's a great workout. So if you want to lose weight, get the gloves on and start, you know, hitting a bag. But it's I'm not a violent person. Honestly, I've never been in a fight in my life. I don't have that in me, except I feel if I'm pushed, I reckon if I'm pushed to it, I would. But the idea of sparring, I like, because for me, I like timing. I've got quite good hand-eye coordination, but I'd always be worried about getting
getting hit. Yeah. Do you know? I always used to
the entire time. You know what I mean?
I used to say to people, like, I used to hate getting hit.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely hated getting hit.
Yeah.
Had me, and they'd be like, well, why do you do boxing? I was like, I love the sport. So I just concentrate on not getting hit.
Yeah. For you, it's like chess, right? It's about anticipating what your opponent's going to be doing and thinking ahead and trying to counter at every point.
Definitely.
Yeah. I know a bit of the lingo. Should we do another ball?
Okay.
Yeah, look at me. I've done a bit of research.
Yeah.
Did you ever have the red mist that ever come to you?
When I was younger, when I was fighting.
So red mist is basically when you lose it, basically. Really up. You're just, you know, someone's hit you and you just want to smack the hell out of them. Right? you go all Hulk. So you only had that when you were younger?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I reckon that would just be me the entire time, to be fair.
The personality or the skill, what drives boxing legacy? Ooh. I think it's a bit of both.
I'm going to ask you to choose. I know it's both. There's obviously going to be both. But what for you is more important? What will drive more legacy? The personality of the boxer or the skill of the boxer?
I think the skill of the boxer.
That drives legacy.
Yeah, because to be able to beat the best, you have to have that skill. You just have to. You can talk the talk, but if you can't walk the walk when you're in there, you know, you're gonna get found out and you're not gonna go very far.
Who is the ultimate boxer who talked the talk but couldn't walk the walk?
Ooh.
Bit of name shaming.
I know, right? I can't think of any. I think the only one that's a little bit like that right now, I'd probably say, is Ryan Garcia. He does a lot of talking, but doesn't always come up with the victory.
Yeah.
and then I guess a skillful fighter that's always won, and I'd say Floyd Mayweather, Sugar Ray Leonard as well.
He was one of your favorites, right?
Yeah, he really was. I mean, he was part of the Fabulous Four, Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Tommy Hearns.
Okay.
That was an amazing fight. Sugar Ray was losing like pretty much all the way up until the last few rounds. And then he just came back and just absolutely destroyed Tommy Hearns. It's on YouTube. Definitely check it out.
So for you, skill is more important than the personality.
Yeah.
But Muhammad Ali is one of your favorites, right? He's your icon. So he had the biggest personality in sport, let alone boxing.
Yeah.
And he's revered as the number one sportsman of all time. Was he more skill or was he more personality?
I'd still say, he still had the skill to back it up.
Of course. But what's his legacy? For me, it's personality.
Yeah, it's personality.
That's the thing, right? Yeah, so one of the greatest of all time is personality. But it's interesting you went with skill. Is that your legacy? Would you like to be remembered as someone who had the skill or someone who just was smashing stereotypes, like I was saying before?
Ooh. I mean,
you know what? Say there's a ball in there. There's a ball in there that has that. So you can think about it. Let's do another ball because there is a ball in there that asks that similar question.
Okay.
All right. You like my golf balls?
Yeah, I do. Is women boxing the most controversial sport in the world? Ooh. I'd say it was in the beginning stages. I think now it's in a place where there's so many more women athletes now doing boxing that I feel like it's moved away from that stereotype.
Yeah.
Especially when we had Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano on the undercard of Mike Tyson. Yeah. You know, that was amazing to see.
It was a great fight.
Yeah. Really good fight. I could see a number three of that. That'd be awesome. Don't know how much Katie's got left in the tank for that, but
it's been through the news a lot, women boxing in the last, especially in the last sort of 12 months, 24 months. Do you have your own take on that? I mean, what's your... When you see the scrutiny that your sport is coming under, does it bother you, or do you feel like you're in a position where you can potentially advocate for the positivity and the right kind of change around how it's being perceived? Because you're an ambassador, you're someone who the sport knows, you're very famous within it. Do you have a role within trying to change the perception around women boxing, or do you feel like, you know what, that's not my business anymore, I'm gonna kind of move on?
I mean, I feel like boxing's always going to have a place in my heart. You know, it's the thing that gave me all the opportunities that I have now. So I'd definitely always be an advocate for it. But then also, I've I'm focusing on new things now. My acting career, which takes up a lot more of my time, and it just really, really excites me. I mean, what do you think about the?
Look, there was a big scandal, obviously, in the Olympics, right? Everyone was talking about it, and I know you don't want to talk about it too much, but I think from my perspective, it was blown a lot out of proportion.
Yeah,
I think it was very, very sad, very, very damaging to Iman. Everything that was going on around it, but it lifted the lid on a sport where, you know, the whole transgender gene enhancement, all that kind of stuff is not just in boxing.
It's
going into every sport. Mm-hmm. So, but it kind of started with boxing, I guess, to some degree. I might be wrong. I'm not too sure, but it's something that athletes are going to have to face more and more. And I wonder what the future of sport is going to look like. And if you're going to start to have different categories of fighters athletes.
I think that'd probably be the best and easiest way forward. Just have different categories.
Yeah. Is that what you'd advocate for? If you had the decision, is that how you would sort of?
Yeah. Just make more categories and then everybody gets to compete, and then it also makes it fair for everybody.
Yeah. But then how far do you go with that? How many categories do you create?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Then you have like subcategories and then you have more subcategories. Then where does it stop? It's challenging. I'm not an expert in the topic, but I just think that individuals shouldn't have to suffer so much. Someone's just trying to box and represent her country, and it became an absolute scandal worldwide.
It was crazy.
It's nuts. It's really nuts. Right, let's do another ball then.
All right, let's go.
So far you're navigating well. You haven't had pineapple, which is great.
Yeah, right. The hardest life punch you've received. Ooh. Hardest life punch I've received. I'd definitely say that was, I had a really serious back injury in 2009. I was getting ready for a competition and I was in a rush because I was late. And I was going down the stairs and I'd left my bandages hanging out of my bag. And I tripped over my bandages, fell down the stairs, got back up. It was quite sore, but it wasn't, I didn't think it was anything too serious. Went to the competition and won. It wasn't until like a couple of weeks later, it just gradually started getting worse and worse. And I went for a scan and they saw I damaged my vertebrae, my spine. So I was literally, I was out of boxing for a year. I was bedbound for 3 months. Like I just wasn't allowed to move and couldn't really move and walk about. That was the most challenging thing that's ever happened to me in my life. I think it would have been easier if it had been like a broken arm or a broken leg. You know, I can get around, walk about, visit people, you know, enjoy my injury kind of thing. But this was the type of injury where I just couldn't do that. And I was just stuck in the bed, basically watching TV. And it was one of the times I was tested most mentally and physically. It was a real long road back, just being able to start walking again, and then from there, like starting to train again. It was when I actually really started using goal setting for the first time. It really, really helped me because I felt like I was just going to training camps and not being able to do anything, just getting physio, sitting there and watching everybody else train. And so they set me up a chart, and my first goal was to be able to walk 50 meters without being in pain. Mm. And then for me, just being able to tick off those small goals,
nice.
It really, really helped me just get back to where I was. I could see and look back from what I could do a week ago to what I can do now. And it just really helped me massively.
I'm just seeing now, like, and you're talking about movies before, like a montage of you getting like slowly, just getting a little bit better, a little bit stronger, a little bit fitter when on the comeback trail. But you obviously had a very damaging eye injury, right? It was your pupil, is that right?
Yeah.
Someone hit you, and if you had any more damage, you could have gone blind in the eye, and that's why you ultimately retired.
Yeah, that's why I stopped boxing. It was a freak accident. I was in my last fight. My opponent caught me with a thumb in my eye, and
aren't they wearing gloves?
Yeah. So it was.
How does that work?
It was a freak accident. It's not very often often it happens. But yeah, I just didn't want to. I didn't want to risk any more injury to my eye.
So, are you still active, by the way? Now, do you
I still train and spar now. I love to work out.
I'm quite intimidated by you. Let's do another ball.
Do you work out?
I do. I try to everything pretty much four times a week.
Yeah,
four times.
That's
a week.
Good.
Yeah,
that's good. All right.
And I play football as well.
I
think it's your. I still believe that I'm good enough to play good level of football. You know, your mind is telling you one thing, but your limbs, your legs, your hips, it just doesn't work.
Yeah,
I pulled my calf yesterday coming down the stairs, for goodness sake. So, I'm getting old, man. I'm getting old.
That's like me in the gym. I'm like, I'm still got it. I'm still got it. Like, my bet.
Well, what have you got for me next? You're in charge, Nikki. You're in charge. What have we got?
All right, let's have a look. Smash stereotypes or smash your opponent?
See, that was the question before. I said it's going to come a bit later on.
Yeah. Ooh.
What gives you more satisfaction?
Smashing my opponent. Yeah. I love the chess, the science of it, breaking your opponent down and being able to get your opponent to a point where they're even too afraid to even throw punches, because every time they throw a punch, they're getting counterpunched. So they don't even want to throw any punches anymore. You know, being able to, because when you're a fighter, you've got to break your opponent psychologically as well as physically. But if you can break them mentally first, the job's half done.
That stare at the beginning of the fight.
Yeah.
Or the
walk
on that you're doing or whatever it is.
Yeah. Like I've been into so many rings in different places against so many different opponents. And I can tell just from when I step in the ring and look at my opponent whether they're up for the fight or not. And I can look them
can
in the eyes. Yeah. And I'm like,
all right, let's do it.
I'm like, this is gonna be a nice day at the office. I could just chill out, cruise control, stay in neutral.
Love it.
And it's easy.
Do you have to be angry inside? Do you have to have a lot of previous trauma? Do you think, and you talked about boxers coming from humble beginnings rather than sort of privileged, but does that make a boxer who they are? Do you have to be innately angry or troubled, or I don't know, troubled, but you know what I mean? I've gone through hardship to be able to be a good boxer.
It's not the anger, because you can't fight with anger. Yeah. It's the struggle.
Yeah.
The not having everything and not being able to provide, being hungry. You know, if you've had to fight for survival, having that kind of drive when you're in the ring, or having that kind of drive, I think, in any career, when you have somebody that's like that, they're always going to be able to push a little bit further than somebody that's, they get up and they've got everything in the morning. They know they've always got something to fall back on. But when you have a person that doesn't have anything, imagine how much harder they're going to work. Imagine how much harder they're going to train to get to where they want to be and to be able to seal that victory. I feel like the majority of people at the top in any field has definitely gone through some kind of trauma to be able to have that cutthroat drive to stay there and keep going.
It's a great insight. So let me paint the scene. It's 2012. Okay, it's London. It's the home Olympics. It's the first time women's boxing was in the Olympics. Is that right?
Yeah,
it was. So it's the first ever time women's boxing has been allowed in the Olympics. You're representing your country. Right, you get to the final, right? You're fighting against your biggest nemesis, a Chinese lady. What was her name?
Ren Kankan.
Yeah, and you and her were like going at it for obviously as an amateur at amateur level before. So you're fighting against your nemesis, and this is a great movie, by the way, right? How did it feel when you were awarded the decision and you were being given the gold medal in your home country in a brand new sport, right? And you're effectively trailblazing a new path for future women. How did it feel?
It was an unbelievable feeling. I just felt like all the hard work, the injuries, the ups and downs, the saying, why am I even doing this sport? There's no support to having that moment there and just being on top of the world, it's one of the feelings that I'll never forget. I'll always remember that time and just how happy I was, and I think I was more happy that how many people actually took to women's boxing, because I was in a bubble in the village. We weren't on social media. We were told, you know, stay off social media, don't look at anything that's going on the outside. And then I won, and then all of a sudden the bubbles burst and I see what's been going on, and I was just completely...
You exploded overnight.
Yeah.
How did you deal with the fame?
That was difficult to get used to at first, because I'd gone from nobody knowing who I was to everybody knowing who I was. And I think the first time when I really experienced it, so we had this thing, everybody that won a gold medal, you had to go into Westfield, which is a shopping center in the UK. Yeah. And they were like, just stand there and hold your medal up.
What?
And just see what happens.
Really?
And they were like, you'll love it. It's awesome. Like, just, you just got to do it. So I've like got into Westfield, hold my medal up, and all of a sudden you just have swarms of people, wow, like just crowding you. Like the security had to take me out. There was people fighting to take photographs. It was crazy.
That's crazy.
It was crazy. And I was like, wow, like that was when I realized how famous I'd actually become.
Yeah.
And then
everybody wanted you, right? Everybody wanted to interview you, to chat with you. Did you feel, and obviously you had that a few years later, obviously in Rio, but did you feel that drop off after you've touched the sort of the heavens, if you like, right? That superstardom. Did you have to then adjust to what life would be like after boxing, where you don't no longer are in the public eye? I mean, how was that transition for you?
Yeah, it was like, I mean, I actually enjoy it. It's still, that was another reason why I moved to Dubai as well, because it's a little bit more of a quieter life. I get to do the normal things, you know, go to the shopping center, and I miss doing all the normal things, because I can't do that in the UK. I can't just pop to the shop and, you know, pick up a few things. Everything's like almost like a big operation to get me in there, get me out without being swarmed. So it's really nice to be able to do those things. I appreciate those things. And I didn't realize how much I missed doing the small things until I got to Dubai and I'm able to do them things now.
Nikki, you are a very down to earth person, really. And for those watching or listening, I don't know if it comes across, but you've got such a great energy about you. Super positive, love the smile, love the overall flow of energy that you're bringing as well. You're really down to earth, super humble, and it's just a privilege having you in my house, to be honest with you. Super happy. And honestly, I think what you did for the sport was phenomenal, and to go again in Rio and back it up with another gold win, it's fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
so
you.
Smashing the opponent, huh?
I love
that, because you're smashing being true to who you are. I love that. Shoot another ball.
Yeah, let's
I think
go,
we've got three more. We're on a roll, my dear.
We're on a roll. Okay.
See, Jonathan Ross doesn't have any balls like this, does he?
I know, right?
Okay, yeah. What's it say?
Oh, yeah. Have the Saudis saved boxing.
Have the Saudis saved boxing.
Yes.
Why?
Definitely.
How do they do it?
Because they've been able to get the big guys in the ring. They've been able to get the big fights that everybody wants to see happening. I mean, it normally takes years to get a Tyson Fury, Usyk in the ring. They were debating for years and going back and forth. And then the Saudis came in, put the money there, and it was like, all these fights are happening.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes. They literally saved boxing, 100%. I felt
boxing was going through, again, accusations of corruption.
Yeah.
Big fights weren't taking place. They were being super delayed. There wasn't a general interest. Saudi come along, and specifically one man, Turkey comes along, and everything starts to change. And, you know, there was a lot of negative backlash in the UK when the Saudis were taking Formula One, when they were getting involved in WWE, when they were getting involved in golf. But with boxing, for some reason, everyone in the UK is appreciative of the Saudis now, what they've having done with the sport, right? Which I think has gone full circle. Have you been to Saudi? Are you planning to go?
Yeah, I've been to Saudi. I've done some of the presenting and stuff there.
Nice.
It's really, really nice. Really, really enjoyed it. And I just love what they've done with the boxing. It's unbelievable. Just being able to get the guys in the ring and fighting the best, because that's what you want to see. You want to see the best fighting the best. You don't want to wait 2 or 3 years for them to fight and then one of the fighters pass the best and it's not going to be the same fight anymore. You want to see them all fighting now.
Yeah. And that's what gets younger people into the sport in the first place, right? Yeah, when they see these great, you know, warriors going in to do battle. So that inspires them to do that. And the Saudis have brought that. Do you think the Saudis have been, and by the way, the news came out obviously that they won the World Cup for 2034 Football World Cup.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I think 2034 World Cup is going to be taking place in Saudi. But there has been in general a negative association of Saudi Arabia with sport, right? Why is that? Why in the UK do people generally haven't shown a lot of love to the Saudis? Unfairly, in my opinion.
I think because they can't drink.
Yeah. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I think it's literally the alcohol.
Yeah, simple as
if
that.
If you ever see the football, you know, there's always cutbacks to people in the pub having a drink.
Yeah. Do you think there's also, I agree with you, do you think there's also a hint of jealousy there?
Yeah, there could be that as well. Yeah.
Who do these guys think they are coming in and taking all these sports and doing such a great job?
Yeah, but I mean, it's all about change, and it's change for the better. They're doing amazing things for sports.
Yeah. Not just in sports, to be fair. They're doing a lot of amazing things across many other sectors. And that's what happens when you have a leader that's thinking super progressive. But look, we've had it in Dubai for the longest time with Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid, a visionary leader who then sort of takes the country or takes the region into a certain direction. That's what's happening in Saudi. I've had the privilege of going to Saudi. I went there in 2010. Okay, so 15 years ago now. And then I was, I went there relatively recently, like a few months back. Again, I used to go quite a lot. The changes that that country has seen is ridiculous. Riyadh is unrecognizable versus how it was 10 years ago. So I just dread to think what's going to be like in 10 years.
It's
going to be phenomenal. And then as they gear up to the World Cup, you can expect it to take on another level. But when it comes to boxing in particular, do you think that this is just the beginning? In terms of what the Saudis want to do with the sport, or do you feel like that this will kind of remain the sort of status quo for the foreseeable future?
No, I think this is just the beginning.
Yeah,
I think it's going to get bigger, better, and more exciting things are going to happen with it. Definitely.
Watch this space. Amazing.
Yeah.
Another ball. Let's do it.
Let's go. Defense or attack? What wins titles? Ooh.
This doesn't have to be in boxing, by the way. This could be anything.
In anything.
In general, I guess with the boxing mindset on, defense or attack, what wins titles?
I think it's a hard one to choose because I feel like you do need both. But I think attack. I think you have to have that energy to go get what you want. So I definitely think attacking in life, you have to attack it head on. Like, let's go.
You seem to be someone who's attacked life pretty
yeah,
much
yeah.
from the get-go.
What about you?
In terms of attack or defense? So if I look at it from a boxing perspective, and even from football, they always say defense wins titles, right? If you have a strong defense. I mean, Mayweather basically his attack was okay, but it's Mayweather's defense has made him so successful. For me, when you defend, the connotation is you're scared, you're cautious, you don't want to take a risk. And then the connotation of attack is that you want to take a risk, you want to be adventurous, you want to go for it. You should lead your life trying to attack life. You shouldn't lead it trying to be scared of life. But it might change through different mindsets or transitions of your life. So for example, where I am now, I want to attack.
Yeah.
Right. When I'm 60, who knows? Maybe it's more about, you know what? I don't want to take more risks. I kind of like where I'm at. So maybe that changes over time. But yeah, I think generally speaking, it's more exciting. It's more interesting. And you tend to get higher rewards when you attack. You don't get big rewards when you defend. That's how I would take it. But I like how you flipped the question on me. I like that. All right, let's do one more. I think we should have one more in there. Based on my maths, we should have one more in there.
Yeah, there's one more. All right. Okay, let's have a look. Politics and Olympics separate or entwined?
Politics and the Olympics, are they completely separate or are they entwined? How much politics are there in the Olympics?
See, that's like, I don't know. I feel like maybe it's entwined. No, I feel like, no, I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I'm just from Leeds.
Yeah.
I love Leeds. I miss it so much.
I feel like.
By the way, you need to take me out in Leeds one day. Yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Take me out in Leeds.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm giving you some buying time, by the way, right now. I'm giving you time to think about your answer.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd say it's probably entwined, I'd say, because everything has to work together, the politics of it and the other, and the sport side of it. And without the politics, you don't really get the sport as well. So I think, yeah, I think they're both entwined together.
When you were winning your gold medals, did you see these politicians or come to you and want to take a photo with you? Which, oh, we support Team GB. Did you see all of that?
Oh, yeah.
Did you feel like you were being used as some sort of puppet?
No, because okay. you've got to see it as you've got to take from it what you can get from it as well. So it's I always see it as a 50-50 exchange. They're getting what they want and I'm getting what I want. I get the exposure too. They get to, I don't know, whatever they're trying to.
Yeah, piggyback off you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So do you think politics generally going forward, can Team GB or any country be successful without proper funding, without the government fully supporting the sport or the team? And if that is the case, if they do need that funding all the time, do you feel like if they don't get it, the government will quickly switch on the sport and sort of turn their attention elsewhere? Is it fickle?
Yeah, it really is. It's about winning and losing. And not that long ago, actually, Team GB didn't get that much funding and we didn't win that many medals. And as soon as they started getting funding, you saw the medal count just go through the roof. So you really do need that funding to be able to compete with all the other countries, especially when you think about the likes of China. I've been to their setup in China in Beijing, and I mean they have everything you could think of in one place. You see the horse riders, you see the divers, you see the weightlifters, and they're all in one place.
Yeah, it's
and it's just, yeah, it's impressive. It's unbelievable. And we have maybe, I don't know, the top maybe three or four really good athletes at each sport, and they'll have a good 200 people that are all really good at this one sport, at this
they
one
got the
weight
numbers,
division.
Man. They
yeah,
got the numbers.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
So to be able to compete with that, you do need the funding.
Okay, I've always wanted to know this. You're in Team GB, right? And do you look at specific countries and the medal table and go, we just have to beat these guys?
Yeah.
Is there one or two countries that you just have, you know, you're competing with? Who are they?
It has to be USA and China.
Okay.
They're the big medal.
But
medal
can you realistically
holders.
Overtake them? I mean, it's gonna be unlikely.
It's a small,
punching above
small.
My weight, but
I mean we didn't do too bad in 2012.
Yeah.
We had a bit of a bad run in Paris, but
I would have thought you would have said the French or the Germans, like a country that's a little bit closer in terms of population size or proximity.
Oh no, you want to beat the big ones, don't you?
That's what I love about you, Nikki. I love that.
And I think that was the great thing about the rivalry with me and Cancan. It was like US Team GB at China. I was like, yeah, I've got to do this. I've got to get this one.
Yeah, you still in touch with her?
No. She unfortunately she doesn't speak that much English.
Yeah. If someone arranged an exhibition match, you and against her, would you take it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know she wants to beat me. I had after I beat her in the semi-finals in Rio, for a second time.
There you go. I'm not just anyone. I'm a two-time Olympic gold champion.
I remember an interviewer saying to me that because she disappeared after London. I didn't see her on any of the on the circuit tournaments. She wasn't anywhere, and then she appeared in Rio, and they said that she'd literally just been focusing the last 4 years on beating me.
Yeah.
So I was like,
she had a picture of you on her wall, dartboard, just like you're just hanging constantly.
Yeah.
Crazy. Love it. I love it. I've got one ball here, which is a blank ball.
Yeah.
And I give it to the guest at the very end. And yeah. I basically say, you can ask anything you want to ask, or awesome. You can say anything that you want to say that you haven't already said. So a particular insight that you've learned along the way, or like I said, any question that you want to have a chat with me about.
Yeah.
So the ball is yours.
Okay.
You can ask, say, do whatever you like.
Awesome. All right. So if you could be anything, like anything in the world, like what would you be? Like it can be job wise, it can be sport wise, anything. What would you do?
I'm happiest when I'm doing something like this, honestly speaking. It's just about growing it and reaching bigger audiences. So I love the trajectory that I'm on, the path that I'm on. It's a very new path. I've been doing this for about a year, give or take. But I would be me. I would just be a more confident version of me. And I would want to connect with audiences as far and wide as I possibly can.
Yeah.
That's what I would want to do.
Cool.
Yeah. Is that good? Is that good enough?
Yeah.
Put me on the spot there.
Good.
I can still take you, brother. No chance. Look, Nikki, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show, really. You're down to earth. You're, like I said, you're super humble. You're fun. You're positive. And you've kicked ass, man. You've literally kicked ass. You've had incredible successes. And you're starting a new venture. Based on your track record, you're going to be successful. And the fact that you want to be the very best in it, just go for it like you've been doing. And I wish you all the very best, really.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're going to stay in touch.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I want to keep an eye on the movie that they're going to be featuring. If they want to walk on part with me, yeah. Happy to provide those services. But wish you all the very best of luck and enjoy your time in Dubai, of course.
Thank you.
All right. Guys, thank you so much for watching and listening. Please like, subscribe and share. And thank you very much. I'll see you soon on the Inside Track.
Neu in der Deutschlandcard-App. Sammle Punkte mit deinen Kassenbons von DM, Rossmann und vielen weiteren Supermärkten und Drogerien. Einfach Kassenbons scannen, punkten und sparen. Jetzt gratis mit der Deutschlandcard-App.